everybody has a food moment, multiple food moments. Everyone has that nostalgic bite, you know, where you get that bite, you're like, God, I remember by the campfire when I was 9. I mean, that is the power of food. There's nothing else in life that has that power.
This is Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, a podcast that explores why Montana leads the nation in entrepreneurship and business startups. I'm Arnie Sherman. Combine a lifelong passion for food and improvisational music in just the right balance, and voila, you serve up Second Set Bistro. Established in 2019, the Missoula, Montana restaurant is inspired by the creative improvisation of the second set of a music performance. Second Set Bistro is the brainchild of a team of owners. Before they opened the restaurant, husband and wife Raz and Maddie Schneider bought and ran the Minor Saloon in tiny Cook City, Montana, with their friend Josh Snyder and chef Tom Stanridge. In this isolated setting, the team honed their creative culinary skills and developed the concept for a new venture. Today on Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, we are joined by Raz and Josh. We'll discuss community building through food, the locavore movement's impact in Montana, and constructing a successful business from scratch. Production support for Can Do comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans, and from Blackfoot, providing communications solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com. It's good to see both of you. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Raz, what is Second Set Bistro?
All right, so Second Set was a concept that Josh, Tom, and I thought about on a BART ride in San Francisco after a meal at Coxcomb Restaurant. That's where Tom was head chef in San Francisco, California. And we'd eaten there, and we'd had this idea to bring this concept of a neighborhood bistro to Missoula for a while. Missoula was a place that we wanted to come because we understood the energy here, the creativity here, just the excitement that we thought that we could bring to the community. And so Missoula was the natural spot for us as far as a place that we wanted to be. We just couldn't figure out what the name was. And so on the BART ride, we were going down to San Jose. We got to a bar, and inside the bar, they had one of these jukeboxes that had thousands of different selections. And we were excited because one of the selections was about 1,000 Fish songs. And so we're all big fans of Fish. So I played a song that probably wasn't appropriate for the bar. It was a 20-minute Fish song. And we started laughing. And it just all sort of came to us in that moment that this is Second Set. This is the second set of a music performance. Second Set is who we are. Second Set is the excitement of where we want to be. It speaks to our food. It speaks to us, our personalities. And so it just, in that moment, and it really happened like this, it was born as Second Set Bistro.
What year was that?
That was 2018. Yeah, it was May of 2018. So
It was a click moment. You know, it just happened, and we all got it. We're like right there. And it comes back to that improvisational atmosphere in the second set of a concert like that. And you have three people inside of the bistro that are creators. And it's that collective mind that we parallel with the relationship between a band and their audience.
We'd cooked together for a while. We'd done some interesting things up in Cook City, Montana at the Miner Saloon. Cook City is a remote little mountain town, about 100 people, 4 miles northeast of Yellowstone National Park. And what we accomplished at the Miner Saloon was this sort of trinity of ideas. And it didn't really work with just two. The three people, we were able to keep each other in check. We were able to bounce ideas off each other. We were able to complete the dish better as a group of three. With that sort of idea, we just wanted to be able to bring something different to Missoula. We wanted to bring an excitement. We wanted to bring some bold flavors. We wanted to be able to create without any boundaries. And so that is what Second Set is all about, and that's how it was born.
So for our listeners, describe how rural Cook City really is.
Cook City is a town of 70 year-round residents with no stop signs. It's not incorporated. It's at 7,700 feet in the middle of the Beartooth wilderness right outside of Yellowstone National Park. It gets down to minus 35 degrees in the winter and might kiss 80 in the summer. It's like a Groundhog's Day, man. It's the same day, very remote. The unmatched beauty, though, it's just raw.
And how difficult was it to get supplies and food to the restaurant?
You know, you do have the delivery of Sysco once a week or once every 2 weeks, but a lot of it was you got to travel to go get your booze, and you got to get any real ingredients you have to travel to go get.
So we started cooking seasonally there, which is very difficult. I made the choice to change the menu every 4 months in Cook City. That allowed us in the summertime to make relationships with some local purveyors. By local, I mean 6-hour round trip, but it was something that I was committed to because we wanted to serve these people good food, and we believed in that, and it was worth it. So that 6-hour round trip, which seems like a drag, was something that became essential to the success of the restaurant.
And we got excited about it.
Yeah, it was because we weren't the guys that were just buying the stuff off the big food trucks. We were going and we were earning it. We were meeting people and we were cooking things that made the Miner Saloon a destination sort of food spot in the middle of nowhere, Montana.
It was also 6 hours to go to a box store, wasn't it?
Yeah. 6-hour round trip. In the wintertime, it could be 2 days if it snows or if the roads are poor.
So you both originally are from California.
That's right.
And you met in California.
Yep.
How and when did you meet?
High school.
We went to high school together. And
Josh used to beat me up.
I'm 2 years older, and we both played sports, and we had some crossover fringe groups, and the relationship grew as when he was a sophomore and I was a senior. I mean, the hook was set, and then once we got to Montana together, it, pretty much soul brothers.
And what is your cooking backgrounds?
So sort of like the dog in the pound that has no sort of purebred bloodline, I am a mutt cook. So I learned by trial and failure in Cook City. So one of the beauties in Cook City is that nobody really knew what was going on. So it allowed me trial and error and the opportunity to fail up to the opportunity to succeed and kind of figure out what I was doing. So I had no training.
And Josh?
I'm a restaurant guy my whole life. My first real job was in 84 at an iconic restaurant in Southern California, you know, Chateaubriand, tableside, you know, black tie affair stuff when I was 15. So I was in love with the restaurant business in the beginning. So I learned that side. And then when I got to San Jose and started my third college and courting my wife, and I decided to go into the back of the house, and I trained under Mark Tabak at 71 St. Peter in San Jose, California. Took a loan out, Stafford loan, and cooked for $10 an hour for a couple of years. So that elevated myself. And then it was, I learned through Jacques Pepin, Julia Child, you know, like your daytime food programs on PBS. And it was, there's a lot of knowledge there. And it was just the passion drove it after that, you know, the passion for the food. My parents always cooked, so I had that influence in front of me. But I would say the passion for the food and what food is to people and how it's such a foundation in life, whether you really accept it or not, that's where I came from.
Rez, your wife Maddie's involved in the business.
Yes.
But you also have a chef.
That's right.
You're both chefs, but you have a chef, Tom Standridge. Tell us about what role he plays and how he got involved.
So Chef Tom was new Josh from San Jose. Josh hired Tom or identified Tom as someone that was an absolute crusher, could just dominate a kitchen at a very young age. So the thing about Tom that set Tom apart that allows him to really kind of be a really, really important part of this project is his stamina, his ability, his drive. And that was something that Josh recognized out of Tom at a really, really young age. You should tell the story about Tom at Joe's.
I had a pizza sandwich shop in San Jose, and it was his first restaurant job, 15 and a half. And he had a passion for everything, and he had a work ethic at 15 and a half. And I was just like, wow. And we hit it off, you know, like, but it was kind of like the mentor relationship there. And then long story short, there's an iconic restaurant in San Jose, California called Original Joe's. You know, it's kind of the restaurant that does, you know, 750 covers on a Friday night, you know, high production, high volume, classic Italian American. He got a job there. He's the youngest sous chef in their 60-year history at 19. He was the sous chef there. So he got tired of that, and then we consciously got him to Italy due to our desire to open second set at some point. I mean, these conversations are a decade old. Ate Italy up, and then he met a chef there that got him on the James Beard team for Team Italy and competed in 2015 in New York City.
I think at the time he was the only American that was asked to cook for Team Italy.
That was competing on the award show.
So that was, it was a great moment. And then he came back and we got him, he came and worked with Raz and us in Cook City. He did a year there. And then it was a conscious effort to get him back to the West Coast to, you know, get polished with a high level chef like Chris Cosentino, who is a master at many levels. And he got lucky to have that relationship. And here we are today.
So you developed this concept over a decade. You've had time to experiment in the winter wonderland of Cook City. You're originally from California. Why Missoula, Montana?
Well, like I said, the energy here. There's something that's happening in Missoula that drew us to this space. The creativity, the excitement of the new downtown, all the available relationships we have to incredible farmers and purveyors. We wanted to be a part of that. We wanted to bring our energy to Missoula, and it was the perfect spot. We don't think that Second Set works maybe in Great Falls or in Billings, Bozeman. Missoula is the spot that allows us to be Second Set. Plus, I've been coming to Missoula since I moved to Montana in 1994, and I've always loved Missoula. My wife and I, Maddie, have wanted to come here for 4 or 5 years. We just finally had the opportunity last year to create a job for ourselves. So we took advantage of that. But Missoula, it's just the perfect marriage for what we're trying to do. It really spoke to us as far as the place that we needed to be at this point in our careers.
Josh, how do you divide the responsibilities between you and Raz? You seem to have a similar set of skills. So how does the workflow get divvied up?
I think that is, you want to come back to the idea of what Second Set is the three people in the kitchen, and Maddie just is the glue. She keeps everybody together. But the people that are creating the food, that are creating the menu, that are creating the drive behind there, I'm naturally a lot in the front of the house. We're all in the back. Raz is a machine in the back. Tom is a machine in the back. It's just, we've worked together at the Miner Saloon. These roles have kind of like already been defined, and it comes naturally. There's not much friction at any level there.
Everybody just kind of falls into place where it's needed. So yesterday we did a carving party for the holidays, and we all just kind of knew what we needed to do. So we did porchetta last night. So people that aren't familiar with porchetta, a lot of people that ate last night this is the first time that they'd ever tried
it.
Yeah. It's a little bit of a laborious process, but it was something that Josh just kind of took on. He said, I'm going to do the porchetta. I'm going to get it rolled up. I'm going to get it seasoned. Then yesterday, Josh had some other obligations, so I was in charge of cooking the porchetta. Whatever has to be done gets done. We all take pride in what we do. All four of us are workhorses, so it's not a question of like one person's taking on a greater load. And maybe for a couple days that person is, but it's understood that we're all in it together. We're all here. We're going to do what needs to get done.
The communication factor, the fact that businesses do not work, relationships within businesses, especially more than one owner in the restaurant business, does not work without communication every day, all day, you know. And when you forget to do that, or you don't have your meetings, or you don't have your little 5-minute meeting in the morning to talk about how we're going to address the day, that'll wear down relationships. We're good at that. We keep the communication open.
So is the process for coming up with new dishes, new recipes, is that also sort of improvisational?
Absolutely. 100%.
So right now, we've been open since August 8th. We'll be onto our third menu starting January 6th and a whole new lunch concept. And so we're taking information, we're learning about Missoula, what the diners want, where we can take them, where they don't want to go. And so we take all this information and we design the menus with our style accordingly. So for the winter menu that'll start January 6th, all the menu items have some sort of story. Next week, we'll start working on those. We'll pound them out. And so part of the second set concept is the second set of the dish, which is the totality of the plate, is better than your first imagination of it. So that's a big part of it as well. So we'll come up with a concept for a dish, and we'll make it, and we'll look at it and say, I think we can improve there, or maybe it's spot on. Normally, it's not. So it's something that we go through. The reason that the the three-headed monster in the kitchen works is because nobody's afraid to speak up.
Call
if
each
it's,
other out.
And nobody gets too upset about it. It's for the good of the dish, right? And so everything is...
You say, like, he'll cook a dish, put it out on the table, and, like, we're going to serve it in 45 minutes. And I'll look at it, or Tom will look at it, or he'll look at it, and we'll be like, in, like, another 10 minutes, we'll have another dish that is the same flavor profile concept, protein, vegetable, and... It'll be plated different, it'll be sauced different, there'll be a tweak in the sauce, and it's the second set of the dish, and then you're ready to go. That's the amazing part. That truly is.
Raz, how do you learn what your diners want, and then how do you incorporate that into the menu?
Getting feedback. Feedback's a huge part of the business, listening to them. Not everybody's going to love everything that you do, and that's okay. You can't take that personally. You have to take that as information that you can apply. So... one of the things that we started to do at Second Set was this concept of the chef's bite. The chef's bite kind of was born from the stuff that gets eaten in the back of the house. You know, some of those odd bits are the best bites of the food, right? And so we thought, how can we share that with our customers? It was also a way for us to test the waters as far as where right, Missoula right. wants to eat.
That's the deal.
So the chef's bites that we have done the first two seasons, summer and fall, is the chef's bite chicken back. So we butcher the chickens and we cut the backs out. Most restaurants will use the backs for stock. They don't go to waste. People use them. But in Cook City, we would fry the chicken backs and use them for staff meal. We just had a brainstorm one night. It's like, man, we should put this out to the people because they're delicious. If they can get over the idea that it's a chicken back, they're going to try it and they're going to be blown away. And so the chicken back was born. And so we fry it, and it's like a chicken rib or a modern-day chicken wing, really. We've served them like that before. But just to watch people approach those, some people, it's not for them, but the people that get it are blown away that, wow, like this is a part of the chicken that I never thought to eat.
We have an idea what is good. And sometimes people, like you've said about the music parallel, like it's sometimes our food's uncomfortable because it pushes some limits, you know. So that's the beauty of ourselves, is the fact that we can make those adjustments if it's a little too much for the customer.
So feedback is important, people. When you're at a restaurant and they ask you how it is, please be honest, because we can't make the restaurant you want unless you tell us the truth. And so that's difficult for people. People come in and they don't want to ask questions. We did a month of training before we opened. So the staff could learn our style, that they could explain the food. We do a pre-shift meeting every night for 15 minutes where we go over the specials. We do drills so that the staff can explain to you what's going on, because we know that some of this stuff's not familiar, but people still, they're uncomfortable in the space. And so we're learning that. We have to learn how to translate what is on the menu, not in our brains, but to the diner. We still have to earn that. But back to your question, is it's just you take as much information as you can and you apply it the best way that you
take an educated guess, yeah.
Right. And so if you're not listening, you're not learning.
One of your other concepts that you mentioned is community building through food.
Absolutely.
What does that mean?
Creating an event, creating something memorable around your restaurant experience. So in Cook City, and especially coming from a small town, there's not a lot to do. So we got really, really good at creating events for people. Just something that made their day, or just something to look forward to, something that they could go do. And so for us here, again, it's just learning Missoula. How can we accomplish that here? We want people to come into our restaurant and have a good time. We want to create memories for people. We want to be able to do that. That's part of the reason that we do this as well, is we enjoy that. I mean, it makes you feel great that you can have somebody come in and enjoy an experience that you've helped create for them.
It's about feeding you. It's about nourishing you. It's, you know, it's not, it's that bite of food. It's the what makes you feel like. It's the memory that it jogs. It's the memory that it creates. It's, I mean, that's what life is about. It's your memories, your experience with the relationships of your loved ones or your new people.
I just, talking about memories, and I don't want to get off task here, but it just made me think of when we did our hiring process. So we didn't look for experience. We didn't hire anybody with experience. We didn't look at resumes. What we did is we had a questionnaire that people filled out. And one of the questions was, tell us about a food experience in your life. Because we wanted people to be able to talk to us in the moment about like how we talk to each other about food. And so what it did is it allowed people to tell a story about something they related to as a kid. And it could have been a hot dog. It could have been lobster. It didn't matter what the dish was or what that food was. but can you relate that experience to us, and how is that going to translate to the diners when you're talking about our food? Even the people that we didn't hire, some of the stories that we heard were amazing. These people telling...
Everybody has a food moment, multiple food moments. Everyone has that nostalgic bite, you know, where you get that bite, you're like, God, I remember by the campfire when I was 9 at wherever you were camping with your family. But everybody has that. I mean, that is the power of food. It is. There's nothing else in life that has that power.
But to have like strangers telling you that story, people that you've only known for maybe 20 minutes, like you feel like you've known them...
Yeah, it breaks down the walls.
Right, and so now you have this conversation. Now we can talk about food, right? Now we know that you understand the power of that moment. And so that's how we hired our staff, is we didn't look at one resume when we hired.
And how big is the staff?
Well, right now I think we have 25.
Yeah.
We are speaking with Josh Snyder and Raz Schneider of Second Set Bistro, located in the historic Florence Building in downtown Missoula, Montana. Production support for CanDo comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans, and from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com. Rez, I know you first came to Montana following the Grateful Dead here.
That's right, yes.
And Josh, you named your son Coltrane after John Coltrane.
Absolutely.
So tell me about the music piece of the business.
The flow of the creativeness that happens in improvisational music with the collective of the band members is what we parallel to what happens in the kitchen. So music will be played loud, long pieces of music. It's the improvisational aspect of it. It could be jazz, could be blues, could be Grateful Dead, could be Fish. You're in the, living in the present, you're creating in the present, and that music moves you like food. Like you can have happy thoughts, you can have, you know, you can go to dark places, you can go to joyful places. That's the concept.
Are either of you musicians?
I dabble in some bass and I sing a little bit, but no.
Yeah. I took piano, you know, when I was a kid, and I wanted to be the best piano player. I don't have the patience for it, but I consume music on a daily basis.
It'll be no surprise to our listeners that music is played during their experience at Second Set Bistro. But there's also a visual element. So tell us what you're seeing in the location when you're there.
Yeah, we have deconstructed instruments. We have a wall that has a lot of brass instruments in it. And then we have three pieces of original art from a lady named Bruni out of Santa Clara, California, the original oil on canvases. And we have a John Coltrane behind the bar. And we have a Thelonious Monk behind the host stand. And we have a Miles Davis over on one of the walls there. So all three musicians played together at some point during their careers. They're all iconic jazz musicians, and the impressionistic style almost of the artwork gives that creative improvisational feel as well.
Raz, where's the Jerry Garcia painting?
There's Jerry Garcia all over the place. So there is a Jerry Garcia that adorns the hallway into the pass from the bar. And then there is a...
Why is that there? Tell him why it's there.
Oh, because he's looking over everybody.
Because he's watching over us.
And then there is a piece of art above the exit door that is kind of, it's a little bit hidden, even
though
it's not.
That's the point, though, right?
Yeah, and yeah. So it's just a little Jerry head that just kind of winking at all the diners when they leave, just kind of wishing them well.
I mean, that's, you talk about Josh and Raz's connection and, you know, where we've been through all the years, you know, like he came out here on Grateful Dead tour, you know, I was a little bit a year ahead of him there, you know, like, but the moments and the bonding that you had at a Grateful Dead show when the Grateful Dead was on, like, those bonds don't get broken. You know, we have those bonds. You know, no matter what goes on in the restaurant, I can look at them and we know we're there. You know, like, that's a pretty powerful thing as well.
You're in the heart of Missoula, Montana, in the iconic, historic Florence Building.
Yep.
You have 25 employees. You redid the restaurant. How's it financed? How'd you finance this operation?
All private. So pretty much Maddie and I right now, we have the Minor Saloon in Cook City that is operational. We have a wonderful staff running that place. We'd saved some pennies. We went out and got a loan, told the bank the story, gave them our business plan. They believed in it, and here we are. So it's one of the beauties of Second Set is we are not beholden to any investors. We can do what we want. So we can change the concept tomorrow if need be. We don't have to freak out about other people kind of controlling what our vision is. And so as scary as that is at times, it's also very freeing knowing that, you know what, like we can make this work in a lot of directions. It doesn't have to necessarily be the one that we're on today.
You had your soft opening just this past August. What have you learned so far about running a business, a restaurant, in this market compared to Cook City?
That's a good question. Cook City, as difficult as it is, you know what the seasons are going to be. And plus, having 20-plus years of experience up there, you really understand the days. You have a lot of information that you can look at in the past and draw from. Here, we're kind of going at it commando style. We don't have much information as far as how the seasons work, how Missoula eats, which seasons are busier, how to maneuver that space. It's just that's been the challenge for us.
I always equate it to like we're in our rookie season. So we're learning the playing field. And like anything in my experience with Montana, I think you'd agree with this too, Raz, Montanans are very loyal and you have to earn their respect. We're developing these relationships with the people of Missoula right now.
Yeah, we took on an iconic space. It's been an iconic space for a lot of people for a long time. And so that was part of the challenge is we want to pay homage to that space. We want to pay homage to the old owners, but we also have to be Second Set. And so some people really aren't quite ready for us
to be second set
yet. And that's okay. Like we have to earn that. And we know that. But it wouldn't have been fair to the old owners. It wouldn't have been fair to us or the clients for us to take on that name and try to be something that we're not. And so that's part of the process. We understand that. And so that's what we are working through now. It's also about making relationships. We're new to town. There's a lot of things happening in Missoula, which is exciting and it's great, but we have to do that. We don't just get to walk into town and now we're like the big shots on the block. And so
it's a great process to be a part of, though. I mean, there's so much learned, and genuine relationships are being forged right now. Like it's an exciting time.
Have you been able to make the locavore connections with purveyors that you need to have?
Oh yeah.
So yes, absolutely. Also, it's a big restaurant, and locally, the beauty of cooking locally is that things happen. So in the summertime, it rains here, and sometimes like the lettuces, for instance, that we use get flooded or they die because it got too cold, right? So we are always searching for the best product. Where that comes from sometimes isn't always from the farmer down the street. That is our goal, but it's not really realistic to think that like a restaurant of this size can be supported solely just by like the farmer down the road. We are obviously going to...
That's what's cool about Missoula, you know, in 2020 is you have, I think, an opportunity. Montana's in the shadow of the West Coast for the culinary world. You know, it's not at that level yet. And you have the opportunity to push the market. There's a huge opportunity here.
In the summertime, especially through the fall, we have farmers that just show up at our back door.
Yeah.
And we just take whatever they have. And we've stumbled upon some amazing things. Nasturtium leaves. So something in big cities that chefs pay tons of money for. We were serving this summer, and we were getting bags of this stuff for like $12 a pound. Where in New York City, the chefs would pay probably close to $100 for this same product. I mean, just all sorts of stuff. Anything that they have will take.
You got chanterelles coming out from like right here, you know, coming in your back door for like $70 a flat. Like nobody gets that.
Purslane, which is a weed that people just throw away, which is delicious.
It's got that great lemon punch, you know, it's yeah.
Right.
It's
and so
super good texture, crisp, you know. Yeah.
Bring it on and we'll take it and we'll figure something out. We did the bite of the market this summer.
Well, that's where our passion comes from. You get this here. Here's what we got at the market today. Here's what Raz came back from this, you know, from this purveyor with. And there is no dish created yet. There's just the
components.
Product. And then we say, what are we going to do with this awesome product? And then that's sort of where the engine starts to move, you know.
For those listeners who are contemplating being restaurateurs, what advice do you have for them?
If you don't have passion, don't even think about it. It's not an easy business ever. Like, you have to put in the time. Everyone wants to open a restaurant because they know how to cook something at home. That's not it. There's a lot more to it. And you have to be diligent about your numbers. You got to be diligent about your employees. You know, it's an everyday, hands-on experience.
More than grandma's recipes.
It's
right?
More than grandma's
Raz,
recipes.
Raz, what do you think?
I think you have to be open to a little bit of critique. I think that you have to be open-minded. you don't have to take all of the advice or criticism. It's just out there. You can take what you want. You can leave what you want. Having some flexibility, not being so rigid that like your way is the right way. And perhaps it is, but
sure.
But having the ability to listen, to take things in, to just be aware of your surroundings. Take that into account before you go into the business. Just be open to hearing what other people have to say. Be willing to learn. Keep an open mind when you go into it. Because like Josh said, it's difficult. It's hard. It is a difficult road. It can be rewarding. It can be heartbreaking. It can be all those things. But
you got to have the passion.
You got to have the
passion
for it.
Josh, you mentioned this was your rookie season.
Yes.
So where do you want to take second set?
Oh, far. I think we want to be here for a long time to feed Missoula, and then you get this boat steering in the right direction. There's lots of offshoots that we want
to
do.
It's a brand, so we're trying to build a brand. So when people equate second set, oh, those guys are opening an ice cream shop. It's second set, guys. We know that it's going to be quality. Yeah. We know that we can go there, and it's the second set brand. It's something that we can bring somebody from out of town, we know that it's going to be delicious.
We want to cook Mexican food. We want to cook Asian food. We want to cook a lot of stuff. And I'm in full agreement with Raz here. You know, we want to set a brand so when you walk out of Missoula and you know that Second Set is doing something, you know it's quality. You know there's passion there. And, you know, it's I've been in the restaurant business a long time, and I've opened other restaurants before. And to see how Missoula is reacting, people give me hugs. You know, I walk the floor every single night. People stand up and they like, thank you for coming to Missoula. Where's that response coming throughout the rest of Missoula here? Like, it's an honor to be in this position and truly excited to be a part of it.
On that note, I'm glad you both joined me today, and I'm looking forward to some great things in the future.
Thanks, Arnie.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Arnie.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, man.
I appreciate your listening to Can Do Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, produced by Peter Hoag and Beth Ann Austin in association with Montana Public Radio. For comments, recommendations for future guests, or general information, please go to mtpr.org. There you can also find previous guests' contact information and content from all our shows. Join us next time when our guest will be Missoula Mayor John Engen, discussing how and why Missoula has become an entrepreneurial boom town. Once again, I'm Arnie Sherman wishing you peace and prosperity.